Okay, hello and welcome to Starkey's monthly kosher classes webinar. This class is held the last Wednesday of every month at noon, and we're here in the Starkey offices in Baltimore, Maryland. I just want to check that you can hear us. If you're listening via the web, if you can chat with us and let us know if you can hear us, that would be appreciated. My name is Rabbi Tzvi Goldberg, and I have joining me today Rabbi Moshe Shuchman.
Good chodesh.
Rabbi Shuchman was here with us a little while ago speaking about the special simonim that we eat on Rosh Hashanah, on the new year. And so here we have him back. We're very happy to have him back today to speak about today's topic. If you're calling in, or if you're having trouble with your computer and you want to call in, the number is 218-895-1203. 218-895-1203. Passcode is 2020#. And today's topic is going to be kosher cruising in light of the tragedy with the Costa Concordia ship. I'm sure you're all familiar with that, what happened over there, what's happening over there. There is a cruise ship on its way near Italy that struck a rock and sunk. And there were a number of people who were killed, still looking for some survivors. There are still some people missing. So it's really a terrible event. But it's something that I think maybe on some people's minds. How does this affect, or should this affect the kosher cruising industry? And what are some relevant thoughts that we might have about it? We've been asked that, and I thought we might address that today. So I guess it's a little more of a serious topic than sometimes we do discuss, but I thought it was an interesting thing to talk about. The first thing I wanted to point out was there is a bracha of Hagomel, Hagomel Chayavim Tavos Shegmalani Kol Tov, that there's a blessing that we say, the rabbis institute a blessing when a person is in a situation of danger and is safely extricated from that danger, he says this blessing. One of the times that what are the four times? I don't mean to be a test, but Rabbi Shuchman, there are four times that the rabbis instituted to say this,
right, this
blessing.
If a person is traveling through a desert, if he's traveling through the sea, if he becomes ill and is deathly ill, or if a person was in jail and was released from jail, he makes the bracha of Hagomel.
Right. So so one of the times is when a person is going by sea. And therefore, one should make this blessing if one is on a boat, that even if it lands safely, as most of them do, one should make this blessing within 3 days after disembarking from the boat. I think that most people probably, if I took a poll of people who take cruises, probably it just slips their mind because they don't feel that they were in a dangerous situation. You don't get that feeling when you're on a boat. It goes from port to port, and it's relatively calm most of the time. But yet, since the rabbis instituted this blessing, it remains so, even notwithstanding the safety of the cruising. But this kind of event that happened illustrates that it is not always safe, and when things go wrong, they can be very wrong, God forbid. So a person should not forget to make this blessing when he disembarks from the boat. The other question I think that we need to discuss is, and if anybody wants to chat with us, feel free to do so. Chat screen is on the left of your screen. And we enjoy when people chat with us, and we try to deal with the issues that you want to speak about as well. So the second issue that I want to raise, Rabbi Shuchman, is whether or not the safety of cruising is in question now. In other words, I mean, this is a terrible thing that happened, and so should it give one pause before he goes on a boat to say, well, you know, I don't know if this is really something I want to do?
Yeah, I think the whole world is grappling with that question right now. It's not something, you know, it happened 100 years ago after the Titanic, and now it's coming up to people's minds. So I saw a news report where they interviewed some engineers, and engineers claimed that these extremely large ships are still very stable and very safe from an engineering standpoint, but they're still subject to human error and poor judgment, and things could go wrong.
Right. So, but so let's look at it from a Torah angle. A person is not allowed to put himself in danger generally unless he has a good reason for doing so. So in the olden days, they were taking boats, and it was dangerous, but sometimes they had a very good reason, like they needed they wanted to move from one country to the next, or they had to go overseas for livelihood. That was very common. So that was one thing. But to go on a vacation where there's a danger involved, one would not really be allowed to do that. But I don't know the percentages, but I would venture to say that the boats are really still very, very safe.
Okay.
And so therefore, if that's true, then we have a guideline of Shomer Pesoim Hashem. And the person, even if he goes into a situation where conceivably maybe there might be some danger, he's allowed to do that if it's a far-fetched, normal people don't think about it, it's something that's done on an everyday basis. I think that would still apply to the boat. Do you agree?
I would agree with that.
I think so.
I don't think it's different than going on an airplane or a train.
Right, right. Now, there may be some other reasons why a person should not go on a boat. Okay, we'll talk about some of those. But assuming that a person is otherwise okay with halachically, from a standpoint of Jewish law, to go on a boat, then I don't think that the fact that one in many boats had a problem would be a reason for a person to not to go. Okay, so that's that we say, we're going to say it's not an issue. One of the things that is an issue, and I just want to bring this up right at the beginning, because to me this is perhaps the main issue, or the most important issue, is the issue of the lack of modesty aboard the boats. Many of these boats travel to sunny destinations where the main event is the swimming and so on. And people are walking around on the boat, not dressed in a way, the fashion that's proper for our standards. And that's something that a person should give a person great pause before he considers to go. Now, one thing I'll tell you, I've spoken to people who have gone to, let's say, the boats to Alaska, and they say that it's cold. And so it's really no different than being in a hotel somewhere, you know, where it's, you know, it may not be the type of dress people wear in a synagogue, but it's, you know, that's the way, that's, you know, they feel that's okay. So it sort of depends on where you're going. It also depends on who the person is. If a woman, let's say, two women would like to go on a boat, as you know, to pass the time. For them, the modesty issue is not really that much of an issue. There could be an issue which type of shows they have and so on and so forth, but the modesty would be less of a problem for them. So it really depends on the person and where you're going, but it's something that can't be overlooked.
I would hope that the people that arrange these kosher cruises, they took this into account, and it's something to ask when you sign up for a cruise to see what kind of accommodations.
I don't think that it's real. I don't know, because let's talk about, okay, most people saw the numbers of thousands of people who were on this boat. And this is typical. How many were there?
4,200.
4,200, including the staff?
Passengers and crew is 4,200.
4,000 people. That's like a small city. So when they have a kosher cruise, they're not getting, you know, a couple thousand kosher consumers to go on a cruise at one time. I'm sure they would love to do that, but it doesn't happen. So they have perhaps 300, 400, 500, I don't know exactly. Mm-hmm. And so that's out of the other couple thousand, and they can't control at all what the other couple thousand are doing. It's, you know, they just take a number of rooms, and they take a social hall is usable for them for prayers, for the davening, for their events. Mm-hmm. But the rest of the boat is whatever it is. There was once somebody a few years ago who had an endeavor to create a completely kosher cruise. So he didn't take a boat that hold 5,000 people. He took a boat that held 400 people, a much smaller boat. And on that, he arranged for everything was kosher. The entertainment was kosher, the food was kosher, the swimming was kosher, mm-hmm. meaning separate swimming. So that's something that, but it didn't last.
It's probably more fun on one of those large boats.
I suppose they have more to do.
All those amenities.
Right. So that's something that we must discuss that issue. We have to bring that up right at the very beginning. Somebody's asking over here, didn't this ship leave port on Erev Shabbos? And please explain the halach of traveling on Shabbos on a ship. Okay, that's a good question. Did it leave on Friday?
I don't know, but Rabbi Goldberg, you're the authority on this question.
Okay, so I do have an article about this issue on our website. If you go to our website, which is star-k.org, and you put into the search bar cruise, then you will come up with this article. You won't come up with any of the StarK certified cruises because we don't we don't certify any cruises, but you'll come up with the article. And in the article, this is one of the things that we discuss, is cruising with reference to Shabbos. What are the restrictions of Shabbos with reference to cruising? So in a nutshell, one is not permitted to get onto a boat, it says in the Talmud, within 3 days of Shabbos. So that excludes Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. According to some opinions, it only excludes Thursday, Friday, and Shabbos. So Wednesday is permitted according to some and forbidden according to the others. But the reason behind this, it's very interesting, is not given in the Talmud. What's the reason? So there are maybe 10 opinions among the authorities why this would be forbidden. So we're not going to go through all 10 now, okay. but one of them is because of the fact that people get seasick when they're on a boat, and it takes a couple of days to get used to it. And if you're not used to it, then Shabbos, you'll not have very much enjoyment on Shabbos. You'll be sick. A person would be sick. So this way, if you get on the beginning of the week, by the time that the end of the week comes around, you'll already be used to it.
Does that happen on these major cruise ships?
Yeah, it does happen. It does happen. I have a quote from one of the news outlets. Here, on a particular boat called the Oasis, during every 7-day sailing, the Oasis medical staff dispenses about 2,000 to 3,000 meclizine, a drug that treats seasickness, from the Wall Street Journal.
Wow.
And then in USA Today, we still hear plenty of reports from passengers who say they get seasick fairly regularly.
That Oasis of the Seas, that's the new boat that they built.
Is it?
The largest ship in the world.
Is it? Okay, I don't know.
Sounds like it.
I'm not familiar with it could be. So, two or 3,000 pills is a lot. Means a lot of people are coming, maybe people are coming for more than one pill. And so a lot of people are getting seasick, a lot of people are not getting seasick, that's true. But this is still a concern nowadays, and for other reasons I mentioned in the article, this concern still applies nowadays. And so therefore, if one wants to properly keep the Sabbath, he or she would only board a boat that's leaving on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, or perhaps on Wednesday. Okay. Now, if the boat leaves on, let's say, Thursday or Friday, but docks for Shabbos, that would be okay. But most of the boats aren't docking; they're continuing to sail.
So, what happens if the boat departs from port on Sunday, but it comes to a stop on, let's say, Thursday, and then it wants to set sail again on Thursday? These boats, they stop at various
right.
ports.
Right. Okay. They stop at
along the way.
Right. Stop at the port. So that's a good question. Is that considered like when they start up again on Thursday? It's a new trip. I've discussed that with various authorities and Rabbi Heinemann, who's our rabbinic administrator, and he feels that that's a continuation of the original trip. So as long as the trip started Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, then even though they stopped at the end of the week in the port, that's considered to be the beginning of the trip. I mean, that's considered to be a continuation of what you started at the beginning of the week.
You can go on the next leg of the journey, even though it's within 3 days of
Shabbos. Exactly. So, you know, this is something that people should be aware of and concerned about. And, you know, look, this tragedy, this accident, does bring to light that there is some danger involved. And if a person would like to protect themselves as much as possible from the danger, we know that it has to do mostly with the spiritual aspects of what a person does. What does he do spiritually to protect himself? So keeping the laws of Sabbath and the laws of kosher and all the laws of modesty is going to be go a long way, a great zechus, a great merit, in protecting him from all the dangers. Okay, so that's as far as going within 3 days of Shabbos. There are other issues also that have to do with Shabbos, with the Sabbath. Let's say a boat docks on the Sabbath. So that brings up a whole another host of questions as well. One is if you get off the boat at that point, you're only allowed a certain amount of travel, walking travel.
Tchum.
The tchum, because you can't go outside the tchum, which is, three quarters of a mile or so. That's not so easy to judge the distance from the boat. So a person has to be careful with that. And then how will he get back on the boat? He needs his passport. He needs his ticket. Perhaps he has to go through a metal detector, which he may end up activating. So that's a problem that a person has to keep in mind. I wouldn't advise to get off a boat on the Sabbath because it has
right.
It has so many difficulties that involved. As far as kosher it goes, again, so you're dealing with a situation where you have 4,000 people on the boat, 300 are eating kosher. Okay, now the boats have many, many kitchens to prepare. They don't just prepare it for so many people in one kitchen. They might have 7 or 8 kitchens. And they can spare very little for the kosher cruisers because it's such a small percentage. So maybe they give them... A kitchen. If you're lucky, they would get a whole kitchen.
So we're discussing a kosher cruise here, not
what they call a kosher cruise,
right.
What they advertise as a kosher cruise, which is, again, it means that you're going to be on a boat with mostly non-kosher mm-hmm. eaters, and you're going to have a small percentage that are eating kosher. Right? So they give you but most of the time, from my understanding, they don't get a whole kitchen. They get part of a kitchen. And it comes down to it that one of these supervisors, a mashkiach on one of these cruises, told me that he saw that they didn't even, on the cruise he was on, they didn't even get a whole table to prepare.
That's a mashkiach nightmare.
They had half of a table that was divided in between with some tin foil or divider, and he said that on one side they were preparing, I think they call it a pig and a poke or something to that effect, like a pig with an apple. And on the other side, they had their meals for, you know, the chicken mm-hmm. and meat that they had for the kosher eaters. And, you know, it wasn't his job to tell them what to do. He was just overseeing according to parameters that were mm-hmm. set up. But that's not something that most people would be comfortable with.
No.
So you want to check that out before you go. What kind of system do they have? And is it an ideal situation, or is it just, listen, we got to do the best we can, so we'll make do?
Hopefully you'll find something that has a reliable hechsher, you know.
Right.
Starkade doesn't certify it.
Right, it's an interesting thing. Starkade doesn't certify cruises, and as far as I know, the other major agencies don't either. There might be, but I'm not aware of the major agencies certifying. Usually it's one of the local rabbis certifying. So you want to check into it 100%. I did a cruise on a big boat. I didn't sleep for 4 days. No door to lock up. A nightmare. Okay, this is Yael Kanner. She's a mashkiach, one of our mashkichot, mm-hmm. Female kosher supervisors, very good one, I might add. And she did a cruise. She says on a big boat, not for the Star K, because we didn't do it. But she says she didn't sleep because there was no way to lock the equipment and the food up. And so how you know, somebody has to be on guard 24 hours a day. Not only that, but the boats are so big, and maybe Yael could tell us more about this, But my understanding is that they do, that the storage is on different levels. So while you might have in a restaurant, right, if they want to take the meat to serve to the kosher consumers, they would go to the fridge, take out the meat, right, and cook it and put it down. But here, the place they're preparing the food is on the first level. But the storage of the meat is on the sixth level. So they need to send a mashkiach up or somebody up to go get it. And then the bread is on a different level. Everything is all over the place. And you need to track all that to make sure it's coming back to the right place.
Wow. I think this boat, the Oasis, has 16 levels.
16 levels.
16 levels.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's something that is really needs to be thought about and addressed. What's that?
Rosh Hashanah.
Okay. Here's another question. Are you allowed to carry on a boat? Is it a Rosh Hashanah? Okay, the question is, are you allowed to carry on a boat on the Sabbath? Is it like an enclosed area, or is it more like the street, where in order to carry you need a special setup of an Eruv and so on? We don't carry in outside in the street. The answer is that it is not considered to be a Rishus HaRabim. You would be allowed to carry on the boat. There may be something that a person needs to do called an Erev Chaseros. Yes, that's a dispute between different authorities. I reference it in my article. That I would recommend that you ask your rabbinic authority for a ruling on that. There are many who would be lenient and many who would not. So that's a matter of dispute. Okay, I want to address some things, Rabbi Shuchman, that are particular to this event that happened. One is, I have here an article from one of the magazines. When can a cruise captain jump ship? So you know that this captain was allegedly jumped or fell.
Captain Shatino.
Right. He fell off the boat, perhaps, or he jumped off. They alleged that he didn't want to get back on and help out. And I was thinking about what is, from a Jewish ethical perspective, mm-hmm. what is the job of a captain or someone in that situation? I'll just read to you some of the quotes over here. On every ship, one person is in charge. There is a prescribed hierarchy on all ships. He assumes command. Captain Bill Wright, Senior Vice President of Marine Operations for Royal Caribbean, says that a captain staying with the ship is an unwritten rule or law of the sea. It's a matter of honor that the master is allowed to leave. Nothing less will do in this profession. So they definitely seem to be alleging that he did something wrong. Whether or not it's legally wrong or it's just morally wrong, that's, I guess, up. You know, that's what they're going to argue out in court. Right. But let's discuss it from a Jewish perspective. What is his job as a captain, having taken this responsibility? So I know that you did some research on this. We talked about this before.
Yeah, the Talmud has a case where there was a marauding army came to Pumbedisa, which is a city in Bavel in Iraq, and the two leading rabbis, the Rosh Yeshiva of Pumbedisa, were Rava and Rav Yosef, and they fled the city. They were worried for their lives. They ran out, and Rabbi Zera, or Rav Zera, who was one of their colleagues, saw them fleeing for their lives, and he screamed to them, "Arkoi, fleers, you know, you can't be so cowardly, you can't leave the city." So the Chasam Sofer has an interpretation where Rav Zera was being critical of them, that they belong in the city, to lead the city, to protect the city at the time of distress. Well, they retorted that, no, maybe they could help the effort. They could help save the city from the outside the city. They could pray for on behalf of the people in the city. They could lead whatever context they could make to find people to save
the government contact.
You know, and this has been going on through all the generations. You know, there's a story with the Nodeb Yehuda when he was in Prague. So Prague was under siege in the mid-1700s, and he wanted to leave the city because he feared for his own life. He wanted to get out of the city. And the Baal Batin, the leaders of the community, they told him, you can't leave us at our time of distress. We need you here. And that's one way that the communities have acted in the past. Conversely, you find the Hafla, the Rebbe, the Chassam Sofer, was in Frankfurt, and there's also at a time when Frankfurt was under fire, and there the community leaders told him, no, you should leave. No, why do you need to be here and be part of this danger? You're more valuable outside.
Right, that's what the people told him.
Right.
Right, so that's interesting perspective. I think we could think about this in two ways. One is, let's say he wasn't the captain, but he had ability to save by risking his life. He's just a passenger, but he can help other people escape. So in that case, it's not 100% that he would be obligated to put himself at risk for other people. It's not, it depends how much risk there is for him. It depends how many people he could save. I don't think that we could fault him if he wanted to save himself.
Right.
Well, that would be an honorable thing to do, to help others, but we couldn't fault him. But when he's the captain, and let's assume that this is one of his responsibilities. So he took the responsibility, we call it achrayus in Hebrew, right? He took this responsibility, he took this job as a captain, knowing that this is the rule, this is what's expected of him. We don't only need a captain to, the boats mostly work on autopilot and he has other people helping him. You need a captain and a leader in a time of danger. That's right. What we need him for. So it certainly has to be implicit in the job that if there's a problem, he's going to help. And so then in that case, for him to, jump off or whatever way it is, allegedly he's not helping, from a Jewish perspective, it's very wrong because we're relying on you. You took a responsibility, and you have to take responsibilities very seriously. He's facing 12 years in prison for abandoning the ship. Okay, that apparently is a legal issue, not just an ethical issue. This question was especially a question during World War II, says Jerry.
Sure, yeah.
Some Rabbanim fled when Abel and Stump stayed with the people. And what about Rabbi Chanan Wasserman?
He went back.
He was in America at the time, right? And what happened?
He went back to be with his yeshiva.
He went back to be with his people.
I think the Devar Avram in Kovna, he went back.
Mm-hmm.
But the opposite extreme, the Panovich Rav Shlomo Yosef Kahaneman in Panovich, so he escaped. It gnawed at him, it bothered him for the rest of his life. Mm-hmm. Should he have stayed? He not have stayed.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what motivated him to build a big Panovich yeshiva in Bnei Brak, because he had that guilty feeling.
Right. So it's... I don't see any justification for him not helping. Again, if he was just an individual that wouldn't necessarily have taken upon himself this responsibility, then there is a lot of back and forth whether or not a person is obligated, probably not obligated, to put himself at risk.
There's a comment from the Chazon Ish. He says if a person feels he can save others but his life is in danger, he does not have to leave. He's not obligated to leave. But if he feels he wants to stay, he's permitted to stay and help others.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, he's not right. We can't obligate a person to put himself in danger. But when that's part of the job, a person is a firefighter, right? So he signed up for the job to be a firefighter, and then at the very first fire, the sign of danger, he runs away. Well, people. We're relying on you. That's why we asked you to do this. You didn't have to do this. First of all,
you knew it from the beginning.
So you know that there is this, an element of danger, and so for you to abscond at that minute is wouldn't be acceptable from a Torah perspective either. That's the way I view it. Okay, I want to thank everybody for joining us, and our thoughts go out to those people that lost family members or friends on this boat, and maybe they still will find some, even though it's been quite a while. If you have any questions about this or other topics, feel free to email us at info@star-k.org, info@star-k.org, or call us at 410-484-4110. Again, we do have this article online at star-k.org. An article about cruising, if you'd like to take a look at it. I want to thank you very much, Rabbi Shuchman, for joining us here today.
My pleasure.
And
thank you for having me.
And thank you for your thoughts.
Everyone have a good Rosh Chodesh.
Everybody should have a very safe a good month, a healthy month, and hopefully we'll see you next time. Take care.
Bye.